Blog Talk Radio.
Make my picture.
Radio, another MMA picks show, Smack My Picks Up edition, gentlemen. This is a Junkie Nation edition. Five title fights, gentlemen. Gentlemen, it's International Fight Week, the biggest week in UFC history, allegedly, or thus far. And these great cards have been relatively unscathed, guys. Thus, so far. So we'll continue to cross our fingers. I thought GG and Goz killed it today on MMA Junkie Radio with their picks, but you know what? None of them have the dais that we have. So before we go into the dais, as E. Spencer Kite said today, when you look at it this week in its totality, it's the best collection of fights we've seen put together. We have a lot to cover in a short amount of time, so let's get to the dais. Fighting out of the red corner. You know what? I just messed up the drop, guys. Man.
Yep.
So much for that. Here goes a Proteus info. Fighting out of the red corner, the man who never has to say sorry, although, and he'll correct me on that, having changed for a loony, Proteus.
What's up, guys? Good to be here.
Follow him at Proadows. And the man who always, actually once made out with Kimberly Page, D.D. Page's wife, joking. The one and only, the Shark Attack himself, the health nut, Steve. Steve.
DJ Tony, we're live like a Super Bowl kickoff, and I'm thinking a few of my picks might have a couple people pissed off. How are you guys doing tonight?
Ooh, that was good. That was good. Follow him at Shark Attack 316. And last but certainly not least, the one and only, the fantasy MMA god himself, the man who pissed off the dog food business himself, Buffalo Blue.
Fantasy fighting god. God.
Gentlemen, here we go. We got a lot to cover with a very short amount of time. We're going to start off with Fight Night, Dos Anjos versus Alvarez. So let's actually go into the card that we are all looking into. And actually, I had to force people to get to look into this, Blue. The first one, Roy Nelson versus Roy Big Country Nelson versus Derek Lewis. Roy Nelson, of course, at 40 years old, 21-12. He's 2-5, Blue, in his last seven UFC fights. Won his last fight over Jared Rochelt. That was February 6th of this year. Derek the Black Beast Lewis, 31 years old, 15-4-1. Since joining the UFC, Blue, he's 6-2. Last beat Gonzaga, April 10th of this year. What you got?
Well, I think, you know, one thing, I'm going to go out on a limb and say this fight doesn't go to a decision. Pretty shocking right there. But, you know, I think a couple things. You know, Roy Nelson has pretty good takedown defense, has always been able to get up from a takedown. But one thing we've never really seen out of Roy, pretty much since the Kimbo fight, I would say, would have been Roy being able to take someone down. And that's exactly what he's going to need to do to beat Derek Lewis. And let me just tell you, that's not happening. Derek Lewis is going to find opportunities. Roy Nelson's going to take a ton of damage before finally Roy Nelson falls down when Derek Lewis knocks him out in the second round.
Wow.
Yeah, this one's hard to call, in my opinion. The odds has it pretty matched up pretty evenly, but in my opinion as well, someone's going to get KO'd tonight, and I'm just not sure who's going to get KO'd on tomorrow night, rather. Nelson fights hard. He comes forward, and he's not afraid to get hit at all. We've seen his chin before. I actually got to see him fight Junior Dos Santos at 117, and I thought he was going to go down a handful of times, and the man just kept coming forward. He was like something out of The Walking Dead. Derek Lewis, the guy rushes forward, he comes in to kill, and he's the kill or be killed type of fighter. Only two of his fights have gone the distance out of his 20 pro fights. And I'm really looking forward to seeing Nelson, being the crafty veteran, taking advantage of Lewis being impatient and coming out with a victory on tomorrow night.
Yeah, you guys both make good points, but let's just go ahead and shout out Derek Lewis for his touch butt pick on the the new ESPN, what's it called?
Body Edition. Somebody, I don't know.
Oh, man. I laughed so hard when I saw that, guys. I can't tell you how much joy that bring me. So let's get into the fight. I think this is, as John Morgan said, a major opportunity for Derek Lewis. And this is a make or break for him, really. I mean, if he can manage to put Roy Nelson away, I mean, they already got him billed as coming out of the red corner, Derek Lewis. And if he could take advantage of this opportunity, dudes, this is a big springboard for him. Like you said, Stevie B, this is a close fight. I can see Derek Lewis taking it because he's a younger, fresher fighter. But Roy Nelson is known for taking abuse and coming back and knocking your ass out. So if I have to gun to the head, I'm going to go with Roy Nelson.
Well, see, this is I might be the only guy that's different. So it's three and oh right now. I think I'm going to go with the Black Beast, Derek Lewis. I'll tell you why. Big Country again, 2-5 in his last seven fights. Lost to Barnett, lost to Overeem, lost to Hunt, lost to Antonio Rodrigo. I just don't see. You know, I think Derek Lewis is bigger, faster, stronger. If it goes to the ground, obviously Big Country has the advantage, guys. But I see Derek Lewis KO actually in the second round over Nelson.
Let's make no mistake, Tony, that I went Derek Lewis KO in the second. I did not
go
Roy Nelson. He lost to the buffet as well as Derek Lewis on Twitter. So those are things working in both of my favors as I make that pick.
Perfect.
See, I'm already channeling blue. Hang on, you know what? Just for that, he deserves his intro once again. The fantasy god himself, Buffalo Blue. All right, so here we go, guys. UFC Fight Night again, Dos Anjos versus Alvarez. RDA, 31-year-old Rafael Dos Anjos, 25-7. His last loss to Khabib. And don't even try to get me to pronounce his last name because it ain't going to happen. April 19th, 2014, he's on a five-fight win streak versus Eddie Alvarez, the silent assassin, guys, 32 years old, 27-4. Prior to, of course, joining the UFC, he beat Michael Chandler, beat Patricky Pitbull, who reminds me actually of a lower-end Dos Anjos, beat Pettis, beat Gibblert. Beat Cerrone. Did you like the Gilbert guys? Nothing.
Yeah.
Silence, crickets. I wish I had this.
Oh, I got it. I was there.
But, guys, I got to tell you, Decisionator Blue, the fantasy football song, the fantasy MMA god himself. What you got?
Well, I think this fight, I think Dos Anjos is clearly the favorite in this fight, but there's a couple things that help Eddie Alvarez. You know, one, Eddie's got to make this a brawl. Eddie's a brawler. Now, Eddie gets hit. He's gotten hit in so many of the fights he's had in the past. But, you know, if Dos Anjos gets Eddie up against the fence, that's where he puts guys in a world of hurt. You look back to the Anthony Pettis fight. When he had Pettis on the fence, Pettis was lost, and Dos Anjos hits hard. But Eddie's been working with Frankie Edgar this camp. That's going to pay huge dividends from a footwork standpoint. You know, Frankie's going to have better footwork than RDA's got. Probably not quite the wrestling, because I really actually like the way RDA mixes his striking and his wrestling together. But I think Eddie's going to look better in this fight than some might think. The biggest problem I have is that Eddie gets hit. And when Eddie gets hit by a guy who is actually developing more and more power – since he's been at Kings. I don't think it's going to end well for Eddie Alvarez. I think it's going to turn into a brawl. I think the fans are going to love it. But I think in the end, RDA finishes Eddie Alvarez by KO in the third round.
Wow.
Yeah, that's a good point that you make. He's back working with Mark Henry, and even more important, you can tell it in his demeanor here lately. Eddie Alvarez is back in Philly, and I think this fight is a little bit closer than what people think. Alvarez being back in Philly, he seems a lot calmer. And let's be realistic. People like to knock Bellator, but Alvarez has had a lot of championship experience, and he's a pretty dynamic finisher. He's got 14 knockouts and 7 submissions on his record, and he's been fighting a little bit smarter as of late. If you look back to his fights with Michael Chandler and some of his earlier fights in Elite XC, you know, he was very quick to push the pace hard, take risks, and take a lot of unnecessary damage. I've also been really impressed with RDA. Everybody knows about how he started off as a 4-4 fighter, at least assuming everybody that listens to the show has a little bit of background on RDA. Starts out as a 4-4 fighter in his first 8 fights in the UFC. But lately, the man has just been torching people. What I'm seeing with this is he's gone from being known as a straight BJJ guy and a ground guy to really refining his striking since he's gone over to Kings MMA. And the way that I see this fight playing out is RDA is going to win if he could go ahead and smother Alvarez and doesn't let him stay clear of the fence. He's got to push Alvarez up against the fence and really control this fight. And I'm thinking that we're going to see kind of a repeat of what happened with RDA and Ben Henderson in this fight, except it's going to be happening to Eddie Alvarez. But Eddie Alvarez won't go down without a fight. I do think he'll go down probably about the second round with a similar KO, maybe an uppercut KO, some type of dirty boxing against the cage, dropping him late in the second round. RDA remains champion.
Hey, DJ, listen to these guys coming with all the facts. Wow.
I know.
I got to back my game. Remember, I'm just a fan, as some people say. So I got to make sure that, you know, my opinion is at least backed up with some objectivity, right?
Hey, absolutely.
Go ahead, bro.
Yeah. So, as Stevie said, this is a close fight. Really pulls on my heartstrings because I want to pick at Eddie Alvarez. I really want to see him with UFC gold straps around his waist because Eddie Alvarez is he's a lifer, man. He's been around forever. You know, he's been fighting in Japan. He's been fighting in Bellator. He finally made his way to the UFC. And now he's finally got that all-illustrious title shot against Rafael Dos Santos. That's what I said. No?
Sorry. Go ahead. Are you done?
I'm joking with you, Tony. No, I'm not done. Anyway. So I think honestly, like Stevie B said, Eddie Alvarez is gonna get pushed up against the fence. He's going to take a little Ben Henderson action, and he's going to go down eventually. So I'm going to take RDA on this one. I think he remains champ. I'd really like to see Eddie Alvarez with that UFC strap on his waist, but I don't think it's going to happen, guys.
Yeah, I'm with you. I think we're all across the board. I mean, you know, RDA is someone that I think we never, at least I never, give him enough credit. Five fight win streak guys: Cerrone, Pettis, Nate Diaz, Hendo. I think all you guys are correct. I think he ends it like Blue. I'm stealing your line, Blue. I'm gonna steal your line. Third round KO. You know what? Actually, I'm gonna take a decision. How about this, guys? 5 rounds decision, but RDA owns every single round. So RDA all across the board, guys.
Tony, you hate Eddie Alvarez's face if this goes 5 rounds. Because if you've seen him after 5 rounds, if you see him after 5 rounds with RDA, that is going to be one messed up face. So I feel bad for Eddie Alvarez.
He will be wearing that
fight.
Hold on, guys.
All
I missed
right,
the
Tony,
drop on that
along.
One. I missed the drop
hey,
on that one.
Surprise, motherfuckers.
Guys, to the fight, the tough finale we go. The Ultimate Fighter team, Joanna and Blue, don't even try to get me to say her last name because it's not going to happen, versus Team Claudia. So we go into, by the way, shout out to the beautiful Amanda Cooper, guys. You guys know I had to go there. To lightweight weight class, we go Ross, the real deal Pearson versus Ill Will Brooks. Ross, the real deal Pearson, guys, 31 years old, 19-10-1. Not a great record. 7 losses in the UFC, guys. He's 4-4 in his last 8 fights. And, of course, Ill Will making his UFC debut here, guys. The one thing about Ill Will Brooks, as you know, his only loss was in the Bellator in 2013. So he fought a lot of guys, but I think Stevie will tell us here that it's the competition's not as great. Blue, what you got?
Well, I think something interesting here, as much as the fight, I think people are going to be interested to see how Will Brooks does when the big lights come on. You know, there's a lot of pressure on Brooks in this fight. And honestly, Pearson's not the easiest guy. Pearson is not a top 10, fighter. But what Pearson does, he's got pretty good takedown defense. He's got technical striking. So if you're Will Brooks and you don't show up over 3 rounds, Ross Pearson can beat you. And so I think this fight is not about Ross Pearson as much as it's about does Will Brooks show up on the big stage. He's wanted this move for a long time. He wants to prove that he's not only a UFC lightweight, but he wants to prove he's a top 5 UFC lightweight. And I believe he can be a top 5 UFC lightweight. Eddie Alvarez is fighting for the title. I would favor Will Brooks over Eddie Alvarez. I'm going to take Will Brooks in a 3-round dominant decision over Ross Pearson. And hopefully, and I would expect this after the fight, Will Brooks will call someone out.
You know, we must be the 4 smartest guys on the internet when it comes to mixed martial arts, because we are just agreeing way too much on what's going to be going on. So let's start off with Ross Pearson. What's interesting, what we have to note about Ross Pearson is that he's back at 55. Back up from 45, and he quit cutting to 45 because he was draining his body and he was having a lot of health issues with his kidney. Now, we've seen Ross Pearson up and down throughout his career ever since about his sophomore season in the UFC. He went on a bit of a run after he won the Ultimate Fighter, but then he's kind of alternated wins and losses. He's had some weird decisions not go his way, which isn't always his fault, but you never want to leave the fight in the judge's hands. Now, I do have a bit of a dog in the race here, because being from the Chicagoland area, I am particularly a fan of Ill Will Brooks. I'm excited to finally see him make the move to the UFC. I am interested to see how he performs when the big lights do shine on him. Again, another guy with championship experience in the number 2 show. I wouldn't say that he's faced poor competition, but he hasn't faced UFC competition. I think the biggest thing that he's going to have to overcome is those octagon jitters that we hear so much about. You see guys come over, guys with big names, guys who are current champions, DC, even Alvarez kind of screwed the pooch on his first fight with Cowboy Cerrone in the UFC. I'm interested to see how he performs. I don't think he comes in and makes a dominant statement like a crazy knockout or a submission. Again, I do think it takes he takes it in 3 rounds and it goes to a decision. So I'm going to have to agree with Blue as well. Brooks wins the fight in 3 rounds by decision.
Yeah, you guys are all making great points, and I love how you're backing up what I've said on this show for many weeks, is that Ross Pearson is no joke. They're not giving him a cupcake. Will Brooks took this fight on short notice. Ross Pearson is a talented fighter. He may not be in the top 10, but as Steve pointed out, some of those losses were controversial. Some of those losses were split decisions, and Blue's point is valid as well. I mean, when we talk about Ross Pearson, he's been in the UFC, he's a veteran of the UFC, and he's been fighting top guys the whole time he's been in the UFC. Now, getting on to Will Brooks. Will Brooks is an amazing talent, and he's a champion in Bellator, and we have to give him credit for that. And Ross Pearson will be a test for Will Brooks. We'll see where he's at, and if he can manage to take out Ross Pearson, then he's going to move forward. And I'm going to take Will Brooks as well. Gun to the head, as much as I like Ross Pearson, I'm going to take Will Brooks.
Guys, you know what? I think we all have that blue love here because I too am taking Will Brooks. Knockout action, guys. Second round.
Wow.
Will Brooks all across the board, guys. Not a lot of deviation yet, but I'm sure those fireworks are coming. To the women's strawweight we go, gentlemen. Joanna, and don't even try blue because I ain't going to say it. Joanna, champion? Versus, you know what? I think a lot of people. There you go. Versus the person that a lot of people, I think, have got a little bit of a crush on now, Claudia Gadelha. Joanna, champion, of course, 28 years old, 11-0, guys. She's 5-0 in the UFC. Last fight, she beat Val Letourneau, you know, and broke her hands twice, guys. Let's not forget about that. Claudia Gadelha, 27 years old, 13-1. She's 2-1 since joining the UFC. Her only loss, guys, the some would say controversial decision over Joanna Champion. Blue, what you got?
Well, I think this fight, I think a lot of people are starting to get behind Claudia. And I think they're getting behind her for a couple of reasons. A, they watched the first fight. Well, let's make no mistake. If the first fight went two more rounds, Joanna Jędrzejczyk would have finished her.
Yeah.
Based on how that fight was going, Claudia was fading in that fight. So I think that's
right.
Something to remember. Regardless of what you thought about the decision, where it was going, it was going towards Joanna. The other thing people are not thinking about is Joanna, since the filming, which filming ended around March, she hasn't had to be seen. She hasn't had to do a lot of media. Right after she won the belt, she did absolutely ass loads of media. She was at every event. She was fighting quick turnarounds. She didn't get to go train. And here's what you can learn in training. You can drill and drill and drill takedown defense. But let me tell you something. Claudia's not going to learn to strike in a 3-week camp, in a 6-week camp, or in an 18-week camp. It doesn't matter. You're not going to learn to be on the level of Joanna that quickly. Claudia may win an early round or two, but when this thing gets into 4 and 5, it's over. Joanna's going to take over. She's going to win, and she's going to stay champion.
Well,
finally, a little dissension among the ranks, because I'm going to have to say that definitely based off that first fight, and I just have to get this out there, Claudia won rounds 1 and 3 in that first fight. She had aggression. She had top control. She was going for submissions definitely in the third round. She faded a little bit in the second round. And I think what really made the difference in that fight is at the end of the first round, Joanna had landed a big right hand, a big uppercut that dropped Claudia. And Claudia had control for the first 4 minutes of that fight. So you tell me how you win round number one by having 60 seconds of control as compared to 4 minutes. You look at the third round of the fight, we had the big headbutt, the accidental headbutt, I will say that. They were both coming in, and Claudia just happened to get cut pretty bad over her eye, and she ended up wearing a nice crimson avatar for the rest of the third round. I think that both of those events really swayed the fight for the judges. I really think that Claudia's top game and her ability to take Joanna down are going to play a big role in this fight. She needs to close the distance. She needs to make sure that she does finish her takedowns. If you noticed in the second round of the first fight, she was probably still a little bit woozy from the first round. She spent a lot of time just wasting energy pressing Joanna Champion against the fence. And she takes her down. She needs to finish. She needs to hold her down. She needs to do damage. And I see Claudia winning in three rounds by utilizing her takedown and ground and pound game. I see a TKO win by Claudia in the third round.
Wow.
Yeah, you guys all make great points again, arguing both sides. And I can't disagree with either of you. But one thing that I do think is a factor in this fight is that Joanna is coming up very poorly on The Ultimate Fighter, and she's made comments about it already, and these two girls do not like each other. And we know that if you get too emotionally invested into a fight, it may not be on your side. And, you know, just on a side note, Claudia does have the best hair, because that hair is just sexy as shit. Anyway, but you're right, Blue, you're right. Blue, if it goes into the championship rounds, I think you're right. I think Joanna Jędrzejczyk has shown that she is a boss, and she can take punishment. She can keep moving forward. She can keep kicking you in the face and in the side and punch you in the face. And like you said, if Claudia cannot get the takedowns, then it's not going to be her night. So I'm going to go with Blue on this one, and I'm going to call Joanna still being champion, Champy, as we like to call her.
We have a split decision, guys. Split decision. Thank you. And the reason why is, you know what, Steve and I are both going to stick on this one, Steve. And at the end of the night, we may hear this.
You might.
But along with Steve and I, here's the thing. So there's no doubt about it. I don't know if it's a Brazilian thing. I don't know what it is, but I don't think that the women go five rounds quite easily. But just, you know, gun to the head, I'm going Claudia, and I'll tell you guys why. If you really look at it, her only loss was that with Joanna Champion. Everyone else she's handled pretty darn easily. If you look at Joanna, she's broken her hands, guys, in her last two fights. Didn't look that impressive versus Valerie Letourneau. And although she destroyed the beautiful Jessica Penne, destroyed Carla Esparza, but to be frank, I don't think any of those three are in Claudia's talent level. So I'm going with Claudia, believe it or not. And here's the thing, guys. She's 11-0, Joanna Champion. She's due for a loss, Blue. She's due for a loss. So I'm going to go with Steve V on this one, the Shark Attack himself. I'm going to go, I don't know if anyone said this, but I'm going to go out on a limb, guys. Claudia, submission, late second round, guys.
I love how you guys are all going for the extra point on taking the finish on these fights. I give it all to you guys, because I can't get a finish on any of these fights. So power to you. You get an extra point if you get these things right.
Well, you got to understand, in fantasy fighting, you have to pick the round, the method, and the winner. And then you have to lock them in the order of your most confident, least confident. I've been doing this for years. I grew up. I was born with this talent. And so what I've got to do is I've got to take this talent and I have to apply it to my picks. And based on everything, all the picks are telling me, I can tell you without a doubt that Joanna's champion will come out on top. The first fight, honest to goodness, doesn't matter. In fantasy fighting, there's no such thing as somebody being due for a loss. Because at the end of the day, at the end of my fight, my arm is always raised. Blue, look at Claudia's abs, though. Look at those abs. You don't think those are abs of a champion or one that's going to finish a fight? I mean, come on,
I think they both have great abs.
Of course we're going.
I think they have both great abs.
Well, as somebody who knows about abs, let me just tell you that 100% she's got great abs, but I'm not so sure that that's going to win her the belt.
They both have great abs.
Fair enough.
So on that.
Hey, yo. Hey, Blue,
yeah,
so you're telling me
the joke.
Even the side pony won't steer you over to the now kind of cute. Claudia won't do it for you, huh?
It doesn't really matter what they look like. It doesn't matter what they're doing. At the
That's
end
right.
of the day, I've got to break down the picks. I think this is a super close fight. I think it could go either way. But, you know, when I go on a pick, 48 hours to fight time, listen, it's one way or the other. You can't waver on your picks. You got to get behind them 100%. I'm not a fan of fence riders, so you can't ride the fence. You got to go one way or the other and stick to it.
Hold on, sorry.
Tony,
I'm
move on,
stuck on the
Fernando's
fence.
Getting mad.
Sorry, guys. I'm stuck on the fence. All right, here we go, guys, to the peak card of the year thus far. We go UFC 200. We go, guys. Let's start off with the prelims. The only prelim that I think none of us will blink on, and we'll probably close the computer top on this one. The lovely Kat Zingano, 34 years old. She just had a birthday. Happy belated. 9-1, guys. Her only loss to Honda Housley. Her only loss of her career. She beat Nunes and beat the lovely Misha Tate versus another lovely guy, Juliana Pena, 26 years old. 7-2, 3-0 in the UFC, although to have her tell it, guys, she's 6-0. Beautiful, lovely, young, good talent. And she beat my crush. I have a crush on everyone. But she beat Jessica. I. Blue, what you got?
I think this is probably the fight I would say is the highest variance fight. So it's got the most possible outcomes. I think, you know, whether it's submission, decision, KO, I think this fight, A, because Kat Zingano is not a great game planner. You know, think about how she came out against Ronda. That puts it in a nutshell, but she had issues against Misha. She struggled against Amanda Nunes earlier. Now, the one thing we're saying about all these people that she's facing, they have fought or will fight for a title. And so that's something to consider. Her quality of opponents is through the roof. No offense to Jessica Eye, but Juliana Pena's quality of opponents is not through the roof. I personally think Jessica Eye is terrible. I think she'll be out of the UFC after her next fight. And Juliana took harder decisions. The fight before that, she absolutely dominated. She got mounted. She pounded the girl out. But I think this comes down to, is Kat going to make that dumb mistake? And if she does, will she be able to rebound from it? I think at the end of the day, Kat's got more tools, and I'm going to take Kat to win via third-round decision.
So before I go into my actual fight pick, I just want to take a step back, and I want you guys to realize something. So this is UFC 200. The biggest card in the history of the UFC and possibly MMA. Of course, they say that about every card that comes out each month. 201 will be the next big card. But for weekend's sake, we've got three big fights coming on. Saturday night, the main event, the main fight, this card has nine current or former champions. And we've got 18 fighters on that card that have main evented another card at some point. So the amount of star power, for you guys listening out there, we were talking about the show the other day, and we were going through what fights we were going to cover. And we were looking at some fights, and we were asking, okay, well, do we want to cover this fight? Do we want to cover that fight? We only have so much time. And fights we would normally devote a large section to, we had to kick off the show because this main card is just so big. So we really need to appreciate what's in front of us. Whether you're an MMA cynic or a huge fanatic, this card from top to bottom, Dana White would say, if you don't watch this card, you're not a fucking fight fan. Bottom line. So as we get into my pick for Juliana Pena and Kat Zingano, again, another close one. Both these girls, this could very well be a main event or at least a co-main event on another card, whether it be on FS1 or even a Fight Pass card. If we're looking at Zagano, she's a finisher, man. She's a finisher. She's a tough, gritty fighter. The things that I don't like about her is just her consistency. This fight overall is a tale of two knee injuries, but when we look at Kat Zingano individually, she's really overcome personal adversity when it comes to her personal life and private life, along with personal injury when it comes to her knee. She's only fought once a year since 2011, which really isn't that great. Going out every year, we do see that ring rust is a real thing, no matter what Dominic Cruz says. But I'm really interested to see how she does when it comes to taking Juliana down to the ground. Juliana's takedown defense hasn't always been the absolute best, but you know, she's also been an active fighter. She fought twice in 2015. She had a KO at UFC Fairfax. She took care of business at UFC 192, defeating Blue's favorite female UFC combatant, Jessica Eye. She beat her pretty handily. And when it comes to their fight coming up here on Friday night, I'm seeing this being a close fight. I'm seeing it being a dog fight. I don't think either of these girls is going to give up. I don't think either of these girls is going to get knocked out because they're both just too tough. Kat Zagano is super gritty. Penya's confidence is at an all-time high right now. She's doing interviews in sunglasses like she's the female Conor McGregor, calling out the champ, saying that she's next in line. But I think Penya pulls it out. This is going to be a split decision. It's going to go all three rounds.
Okay, first of all, on that Penya with the sunglasses on, please, stop. Do something first, win something first, and then you can pull a Conor McGregor. Listen, I think Kat Zingano crushes Juliana Penya.
Go ahead. Oh, sorry,
okay, Tony.
Give me the record scratch on that. You hate Penya.
All right. Anyways, I think Kat Zingano crushes her. I don't think she's on the same level. She's a talent, that's for sure, and she's coming up. Both these girls have had time off, and we'll just have to see which one has less ring rust. Let's be honest. Kat was over in Thailand training her Muay Thai and enjoying that lovely sun, I'm sure. And Juliana Pena was training in Chicago, I believe, right? Is that right, guys? She was training in Chicago mainly for this fight.
Yeah, Chicago
and,
nightclub, correct.
That's correct, yes.
Yeah. Right. So let's see what happens, but I think Kat gets this one done, guys.
Yeah, you know what? Any single time there are women fighters, guys, I always say, well, that was a delay. Never mind. That one didn't go through, guys. Never mind. I messed up that one. Here, I was gonna save this one for the lovely. I saved it. Okay. Hey, guys. So Zingano versus Pena. I gotta be honest with you. This was a tough one. This is one of those that I didn't want to see, but I gotta be honest with you. Just like in the Alvarez. Well, actually, we'll get into it a little later, but. The Aldo Edgar, one person going up, one person coming down. I'm a big fan of Kat Zingano. I always have, and she beat the lovely Misha Tate. She beat Nunes, lost to Housie, and that's right, I said Honda Housie. I don't know what the, like Blue said, I don't know what kind of debacle was that, but you know, none of them have fought recently. February 28, 15 was the last time Kat fought. Or what did she beat? No, she beat I, right? No, she lost to I. No, she beat I. Did she beat I, guys?
That
she
was
just
Juliana.
Beat I not so long ago, right?
Yeah, that was Juliana. Kat
right.
hasn't
and,
fought since Rousey.
It hasn't fought since Rousey. Pena beat my loveliness, Jessica I. Blue, I know that we'll be watching her in the big screen of Dave and Buster's. At Bellator, but I got Juliana Pena, guys. I got Juliana Pena in a unanimous decision over the lovely Kat Zingano, guys. That's what I got. Yeah.
So I got a curious question for Steve and for Tony. The more I think about this fight, the only place I can get that Juliana may have an advantage, she may have an advantage. In jiu-jitsu. I'm
maybe.
Not sure she has an advantage striking. I'm not sure she definitely doesn't have a wrestling advantage. And so I think Kat can potentially dictate where it's fighting. Do you see Pena winning on the feet, or do you see her winning on the ground? How do you see her And what part of her skill set do you see, you know, kind of beating Kat in this fight?
Steve, go ahead.
Well, first of all, she trained up in the Pacific Northwest with Sikh Jitsu. So she doesn't have the advantage in necessarily Jiu-Jitsu, but Sikh Jitsu. So just wanted to clarify that real quick. But as far as Pena's advantages, what I do think she actually ends up doing is I really think that she actually has a little bit more, in my opinion, a little bit more advantage in the striking. If she could go ahead and keep it on the feet and possibly mix up her striking with some takedowns, if she could go ahead and take Kat down, and like I said, this is gonna, I really think this is going to be a brawl. If she could get Kat mounted and start landing some really heavy ground and pound and land in volume, I really think that she could come close to finishing this, but I don't see it coming to a finish. I really do think this is going to be a close fight, and I really do think it's going to be a war overall.
Yeah, you know, I got to agree with Steve. I think it's more the same, exactly what Steve said, but I think the advantage is, and Joe will tell you, I have one foot in the grave, but I think it's youth, guys, and I think there's an eight-year difference between the two. As great as Kat Zingano is, I just think Juliana's stronger, guys, and even though her game is not as advanced as Zingano, I think Zingano makes some not so smart decisions sometimes, just like the lovely Misha Tate when it comes to battling. You know, intelligence is one thing until you get hit in the face, right, guys? The plan goes to crap once you get hit in the face, and I think that's what happens with both of them. So, yeah, I believe I'm with Steve on that one, Blue.
All right, well, I think Kat's mental game is what can cost her, and I think if Juliana gets top position on the bottom, it could be bad for Kat. You know, I think those are the two places that put her in danger, but I think Kat will be able to avoid those enough to win. I think it's an interesting fight. So,
agreed.
I think you're right, Blue. I think we all want her to be on the bottom. All right, man. Hang on, I missed that one. Thank you. All right.
Yeah, no.
We stick with the same card, UFC 200, the fight card, guys. This one's shocking. And this talk about, and Steve mentioned how many of these fights can literally headline maybe a pay-per-view. Heck, if DJ's headlining a pay-per-view, any of these fights can. But we go to the heavyweight division, men's heavyweight, guys. Cain Velasquez, 33 years old, 13-2, guys. Injury riddled career. His last loss came after an almost 2-year stint, guys. Medical hiatus, that is. Lost the belt to Verdum. And, of course, you got Travis Hoppe Brown, as my wife likes to call him, Brownie. 33 years old, 18-3-1. Of course, the boyfriend of the lovely Honda Housley, 5-3 in his last eight fights, guys. Last four, beat Mitrione, beat Shaw, both who are now out of the UFC for different reasons. Lost to Arlovski and lost to Verdum. Blue, what you got?
Well, I think, you know, Brown's training with Edmund, which has worked out well for pretty much no one outside of Ronda. you know, he had Jake Ellenberger for a little while. That worked out awful. Jake's now back over at King's much more. He, you know, and then Rousey lost. And then Travis Brown's been there. And frankly, I just don't think Edmund's a good coach. I don't think it's a top camp. I think iron sharpens iron, and there's no better iron to sharpen iron than Daniel Cormier and Cain Velasquez. The fact that they had a full training camp together cannot be undersold here. And I think Cain's back. He wants to prove something. And I think we get C-level Cain, and therefore we see Cain finish him and finish him early. Cain, KO1.
Wow.
Here's the thing. Cain's in Vegas. He's thought to be healthy. He's hungry, and Cain's down to get heavy with Travis Brown. This guy, I think Cain, we're going to see the Cain of the old back in this fight. Like I said, he's healthy. We've talked about, and people know about his injury-ridden career and how it's cost some fights and how it's had him pull out of a lot of fights. What I think Cain really needs to do is he just needs to do what he does best. He needs to be Cain Velasquez. He needs to smother his opponents. He needs to move forward, keep his hands up. He needs to bury his face in Travis Brown's chest, and he just needs to put the pressure on Brown constantly. We've kind of seen where guys have come forward on Brown. He panics a little bit, but what Kane also has to watch out for is, you know, Brown, he's a dynamic striker. I mean, this guy, he's got KO wins by Superman punch. He's got those vicious 3-9 elbows from the side that he used on Josh Barnett, that crazy front kick that he hit Overeem with. He's had head kick knockouts as well before he made it into the UFC. This guy's rangy. I mean, he's 6'10". He's huge. So Kane needs to close that distance on Brown. If he gets inside of Travis and smothers him and really puts it on him, I could see a TKO victory if Kane is healthy. That is the caveat I'm putting on this one. If Kane is healthy, if he smothers him, if he pushes the pace like the old Kane did, like UFC 166 Kane Velasquez did to JDS, Kane will win this fight in the third round by TKO.
Yeah, I think this is also, as we mentioned at the top, such an amazing card. And the main card is just spectacular with amazing fights, guys. However, this fight here, I think, the more I think about it, the more I see less opportunities for Travis Brown to win this fight. One, because he's training at the Glendale fight. What is it? The Glendale Fight?
Fight Club.
Anyways,
I think.
Fight Club. Thank you, DJ. And I don't know. I don't know if they are training a full game there. If they're just training boxing with a little bit of takedown defense. Not being there, I don't know what they're doing. But Kane Velasquez, I've seen the documentary put out by Flow Sports, and they've brought in a fella that is. A very highly ranked kickboxer, and he's also very tall. So Kane Velasquez has been seeing this opponent for a while now. And he's, as far as we know, he's uninjured, which is great. And if you looked at him in the Flow Sports documentary that they put out on DC, he is a beast with training. And I think that Kane Velasquez has more ways to win. And like Stevie said, if he can get inside of Travis Brown's effective area, that's where he needs to be. And we know that Kane can do that. His wrestling is on point, and he's not a wimp when it comes to punching. I mean, look what he did to Brock Lesnar. He basically retired Lesnar. So I'm going to go with Kane Velasquez on this one, guys. I don't really see too much of anything that Travis Brown has to offer.
You know, guys, I think we're again all across the board. You know, the great thing is I think Travis Brown, Steve, I think Hapa is actually 6'7", if I'm not mistaken. It's still 7 inches taller than I am and about 6 inches taller than Kane. But, you know, aside from the length, and he's actually a really good athlete, guys, as you guys all attest to. I just don't see how he doesn't have enough tools in his belt. I agree with you guys 100%. Assuming Kane is Kane, here I go, Blue, riding on that fence, right? But assuming Kane is Kane, I think it goes. I actually agree with Steve. I think it goes either second or third KO, TKO. I just don't see how Papa can handle Kane's relentless pace. And you know, the only time I think Brown has a chance, guys, if the length gets Kane, but Kane actually has a pretty good chin too. I'm with you guys 100%, guys. I think it's Kane, probably second or third, late TKO in the second, early third. I got Velasquez.
But Tony, this will really show us where Kane Velasquez is, though, right? Like we haven't seen much. I mean, the last time we saw him. Elevation. So, but this will really see if Kane is either if the injuries are too much or if he can actually move forward. Right, Blue?
I think we will not learn if Kane's back because I think Kane's going to look good against Travis Brown. I think it's a hand-picked matchup that makes sense. Kane uses combinations to get into his takedowns a lot of times. He doesn't use those fence takedowns that you saw, you know, Barnett get taken out with the elbows. Kane's going to go in, and Kane's going to, you know, get you down quickly most of the time when he gets you down. It's not going to be this long struggle for the takedown. And I think he finishes him within 3 to 4 minutes. I don't think he has any issues with him. I'm not big on Travis Brown anymore. I think he's got talent, but I just think there's so many other factors that he's dealing with right now, I think being Ronda's boyfriend affects him. You know, I think that has a negative effect, you know. Maybe after the fight he has to sit in the corner and cry and think if he wants Ronda Rousey to have the baby, you know, to keep him going. So
I think we'll all take that job, by the way.
Steve, you got anything more to add?
Just looking at this all together, Kane does have to worry about Travis's range. I don't see this one ending early in Kane's favor. I do see it ending in the third, like I said, but just given the time that he's been away from the octagon and kind of getting back in there and shaking some of that ring rust off, I don't think he's going to look terrible, but I don't think he's going to come out of the gate like a bat out of hell. I think we'll learn a lot about Kane in that first round as far as where he currently is at right now. And calling this kind of a hand-picked matchup, yes, it does make sense. I agree with that. I think this is Kane's fight to lose.
Agreed, gentlemen. We move up to the featherweight we go. Three more after this one, guys. Jose Aldo Jr. versus Frankie the Answer Edgar. Edgar at 34 years old, guys, 24-1. He lost to Bendo twice. Last loss was to Aldo effectively 3 years ago, guys. And we all know, unfortunately, what happened with Jose Aldo Jr. Jose, of course, prior to his 13-second KO versus McGregor, Aldo hadn't lost in 10 years, Blue. Not in 10 years. Jose Aldo, 29. I don't know if I believe that age. 29, 25-2. Blue, what you got?
I think there's a lot of questions on Jose Aldo's end. There's not a lot of questions for me on Frankie Edgar's end. I think anytime you go into fight, you have to look at fighters that have questions because you have to answer those questions during the fight. Is Frankie Edgar going to show up ready to fight? Absolutely. Is that loss affecting Jose Aldo? We won't know until he starts fighting. Is Frankie Edgar, you know, has he got momentum coming into this fight? Yeah, he just knocked out Chad Mendez. He's won like 7 straight. He's got everything lining up for him. Yes, absolutely. You know, Frankie Edgar's got momentum coming into this fight. Jose Aldo does not have momentum coming into this fight. Not only did he get knocked out by Conor after him and Conor went around the world for a year, but then, you know, he pulled out of fights. He's out of favor with the UFC. He's had a lot of long training camps and injuries. He hasn't finished a fight. You know, he doesn't finish a lot of fights. People have said his fighting style is not as exciting as it once was. So, yes, another question about Jose Aldo. But something we cannot forget, this is still Jose Aldo. This is still a guy that ran through the WEC. This is still a guy that's not that old. You know, so is he having more fun? Is the pressure off by losing the title? Maybe. Again, another question we have to answer. For Frankie, I think the question you have to answer is this his last shot? Does he have to go to 35 if he loses? Is he going to be able to work his way up to another shot? It took him like 7 fights this time. So I think there's less questions for Frankie Edgar. And I think that's one of the coolest things about a fight. There's these questions, and the fights answer the questions. And I think that's one of the coolest things about mixed martial arts. In this fight, Frankie's footwork keeps getting better, but Frankie's power keeps coming on. Stronger and stronger, it feels like, every fight. I think Frankie trained with Eddie Alvarez. I think that's going to help him a lot. And I think that Jose Aldo's coming back too quickly after getting knocked out in December. I think Frankie knocks him out in probably the third or fourth round.
Wow.
Yeah, I think that Jose is coming back too quick as well. I think we might see a little bit of what happened to Chad Mendes with Frankie as well. And guys, we know Frankie can take a shot. I mean, all of the Gray Maynard fights prove that he can take a shot. But I really want it to be Frankie Edgar's time. And I know that I'm letting my heart get in the way of this pick, but I need to go with Frankie Edgar, guys. Like we said yesterday on the phone call that none of these other people were privy to, I think that it's really important that he's seen Jose Aldo once already. And I think he's going to take that and he's going to move on. And I think he is a well-oiled machine right now. I think he's at his peak, and this is his time. And if he can manage to take advantage of this and turn it into a win and be a two division champ, that'd be awesome, dudes. And I'm going to take Frankie.
So first of all, let's make no doubt about it. Jose Aldo won that first fight. He won it 3-2. He, of course, in Jose Aldo fashion, he took the first three rounds. He lost the last two rounds. He kind of took off those last two rounds. If you look at the first fight too, he was breathing out of his mouth coming into that fourth round. You cannot have that type of performance against a guy like Frankie Edgar. Early on, that right hand was really landing for Jose. His jab was landing well, keeping Frankie off of him. And ooh, those leg kicks, Jesus. The problem with all that offense on the early side of the fight is Frankie wore that going into the fourth and fifth round. He won the fourth and fifth round, but that third round was very questionable. Well, I won't even say very questionable. It was questionable. That was the round that could have possibly put the pendulum back on Frankie Edgar's side. But Jose Aldo did enough in the first three rounds. If you guys, everybody talks about the Jose Aldo of the Jose Aldo back in WEC. Well, he was finishing these guys, the majority of these guys, within, you know, one, two, three rounds. He was knocking people out. He was killing people. And we've got all these questions surrounding Jose Aldo, as Blue pointed out earlier, but I have the answer. Frankie Edgar.
You know what? That deserves a rim shot. You know what? But I'm going to have to give you this.
Uh-oh.
Unfortunately, guys, we're all across the board again. Darn. No controversy. You know what? I should probably have a Prince drop somewhere. It's just not my type of music. But, you know, guys, along with the same lines, one person going up, one person going down. Technically, I think Jose Aldo Jr. is 5 years younger than Frankie. I think he's done, guys. I don't think he has much left. I don't know what it is. I don't know. It's just the fact that McGregor took the life out of him. I honestly don't think he wants to continue fighting for whatever reason. And he's looking past Edgar. However, guys, and Blue, correct me if I'm wrong, as I look at Frankie Edgar's last fight, now, mind you, the Chad Mendes, that was a straight-up ass kicking. Oops. I don't work Blue, but there you go. No pun intended. Uriah Faber, come on, guys. He's not the Uriah Faber of old, pun intended. Cub Swanson, an old BJ Penn. Charles Oliveira, I'll give you that one. But not great competition, guys, except for Chad Mendes. And Jose Aldo has fought literally the best in the biz, but I just don't think he's got much left, guys. I say Frankie, and I say Frankie probably a second round TKO stoppage. I don't think he KOs him, but it's close enough. It's Frankie's time, guys. He's the answer. Steve said it best. All across the board, guys, I think it's Frankie.
I struggle when you say that Frankie, you know, has fought solid guys outside of Mendes, but when you say that Aldo's fought the best in the world, he's fought some pretty good guys, but you know, he's fought Mark Hominick. He fought the Korean Zombie. He fought supposed to fight Pettis, but didn't. You know, so I think some of his title fights have not been as difficult. He beat Chad Mendez. That's the big fight that he had, and he beat Frankie Edgar in an extremely close fight. He beat Uriah Faber, which is honestly at 145, not some miraculous thing that he did. So I think he's beaten good guys. I think he's beaten similar guys. He hadn't fought many, you know, combination strikers, and that's where Connor, you know, Connor hit the big punch. We have no idea how that fight will play out. But let me tell you something. Do not sell Jose Aldo short coming into this fight. He lost in a 19-second KO to Conor McGregor, 13. Who at 145 hits harder than anybody in history. And that's the only thing that ended Jose Aldo's 10 years.
Yeah, it did end his 10 years.
10-year round, yeah. I mean, that's a 10-year run is amazing. Jose Aldo, I think, will go down in the in MMA history, if not UFC history, as one of the best ever, but I think it's Edgar's time. We go down to my favorite guy. Speaking of legs, Steve was mentioning legs and leg kicking. Speaking of someone who has great legs and doesn't kick very often, Misha Cupcake Tate versus Amanda the Lioness Nunes. Nunes, of course, the younger of the two by a year. Amanda 12-4, 5-1 in the UFC. Four of those were finishes, guys. You know, Blue will probably kill me on this one too, but I think finishes mostly against marginal fighters at best, at least not top tier when you look at Baszler and Valentina, who I like, and Jermaine. But, you know, obviously she lost to Zingano, and Zingano put a good hurting on her versus the lovely, of course, Tate. Tate, guys, in the last 7 years, her only losses, three of them in the last 7 years, twice to Honda Housie and once to Zingano Misha Cupcake. Let's call her takedown. Tate, 29 years old, 18-5, guys. Blue, what you got?
Well, I think one of the biggest keys in this fight is that Misha's got to be smart early. So Amanda Nunes, probably in the first 7 minutes of a fight, is as dangerous as anybody outside of Ronda Rousey. In that first 7 minutes, she has huge power. She's coming after you. Look at what she dropped Zingano. She has finished opponents here lately early, but she fades. And so I think Misha's got to try to use her wrestling early. Do not stand and trade with her early. I think she's got to wear her down, get it to the later rounds. Misha's got a clear advantage as she gets out of the first, I think probably the first 7 minutes. Once we get to the midway part of the second round, I think she's got to mix her wrestling and striking. And I think Misha's underrated jiu-jitsu game. I don't think she gets credit for that part of her game, and it's very, very good. She used it to win the Strikeforce title. She used it now, you know, to beat Holly. And so I think that you'll see that. And I think, you know, a lot of people, and Brian Caraway is probably the best at this. He takes advantage of every mistake, and that's what Misha does. If you make a mistake, Misha's going to jump all over it. And Amanda Nunes is going to make a mistake. Holly Holm made a mistake. And I think, you know, Misha will find a way to finish, you know, sometime in probably round three.
Wow.
You know, one of the biggest issues that I see when it comes to our current bantamweight champion is that she's a slow starter. She's got great heart, and I have seen, in my opinion, exponential growth in Misha Tate within the past 3 years. I mean, her striking has come a pretty far way, even from the eye of a fan like myself. She went from overextending, reaching, charging forward, really just kind of waving her hands in front of her to a really refined approach. And although I definitely don't think she got the better of Holly Holm in the striking game in their title bout, I do think that she actually was a bit competitive in there. Shoot, we even saw with Ronda, she was able to tag Ronda a little bit in the fights that they had, even though she was finished by submission. The problem with Misha Tate is that she is a slow starter. We saw that against Jessica Eye. We saw that against Holly Holm. And yes, she did come out victorious in those fights, but when we look back at her fight with Rinna Kai, that was even a close decision. I remember watching that fight thinking, I'm not even too sure if Misha actually won that fight. Nunes is notorious for storming out in the first couple rounds and taking the fight to her opponents. All of her wins have come within the first round, except for three of her fights. She needs to capitalize on that slow start by Tate. I really think that with the fact that she hits hard, she's got a lot of power behind her punch. She's got a lot of KO power, too, a lot of knockouts on that record of hers. A wise scholar once said, your time is up, my time is now, and I think it is time for Amanda Nunes to go ahead and capitalize on Misha Tate's slow start. She takes the first two rounds, Misha wins the third, and I'm going to call for the upset. Amanda Nunes beats Misha Tate 2-1 in a three to two in a five-round decision. I got ahead of myself there.
Yeah, I think I'm going to play the Joe track here, and yeah, crazy. honestly, I don't know what Amanda Nunes has for Misha Tate. I know that she's the number one contender, but I was watching her on the Embedded, trying to climb up some rocks.
I saw that.
At Red Rocks, and she was winded at the end of it. And I don't know about you, but that doesn't look good for a title fight. Look, Misha Tate is ever improving, and she's much better than what she used to be. And I don't know, with the new camp and being at Randy's gym, I don't think that I think she's getting a good training now, and I don't think she's going to be a slow starter. I think that she learned a lot from the Tate fight, or from the last fight that she had. My brain is gone now, boys. It's now 8 o'clock. Yeah, it's now 8 o'clock in the evening for me, so my brain is a little bit going. I'm sorry. So I think she learned a lot from the home fight. I think that she learned a lot about herself in the home fight. And I think she takes this one, boys. I think she's going to take it, and then she's probably going to take it easy. Maybe she looks good in it. And you know what, Stevie? If she doesn't, then, you know, I'll eat crow, and that's fine. But I think that Misha takes this one down, guys.
Much respect to Misha Tate, but watching her fights to me, not that they're not exciting, but watching her fights to me are like watching the hot girl in a horror movie go to the lawn shed to hide in there.
Yeah.
You don't know what's going to happen. You're waiting for
the
worst. And sometimes she gets out. But other times, Jason Voorhees comes in and chops her head off. I think
Could
Jason
you imagine
Voorhees
if she fought
is going to be
– Cyborg?
What's that?
Sorry, just on a side note, could you imagine if she fought Cyborg?
Oh, Lord, I don't even want to think about that.
Exactly. So, I'm sorry, go back to your point there, Steve.
But what I'm getting at is the whole slow start, I really think that watching her fight and seeing her, although she's had a lot of maturity, a lot of growth in the UFC, and I think working with Robert Paulus has been great. I think we've seen it with her. I think we've seen it with Caraway as well. But I see Nunes coming out, capitalizing on the slow start, really making a statement within the first three rounds, maybe even taking the fourth if she does enough damage. Of course, Misha's not going to give up. I don't see her getting finished. But I can see Nunes. I do see Nunes winning a decision.
Yeah, I just don't see how Nunes wins. I mean, she's not as skilled. She's, mind you, I'm probably the worst guy to ever pick against Misha. But, you know, Steve's made two good points. Misha's a horrible starter. She's a very slow starter. Blue said it as well. Not great with a game plan as good as Caraway is. I think, again, once you get hit in the face, it's plan B, right? And it's funny how Proteus said that Misha Tate's going to look good in the fight. Really? She's like the hottest woman in MMA. arguably, but that's
tell
my
you what.
Pick. So I'm going.
I tell you
I'm
what,
going
with, man. Go ahead.
So I'm going to go with Tate. I'm going to go Tate, believe it or not, guys, with a move that she did years ago against a fighter that I think is kind of similar, and Blue will probably correct me on this, with Marluce Kunin, and just in terms of the way she fights, not as skilled, but Nunes has very good jiu-jitsu. I'm going to go with Misha Tate, believe it or not, guys, with the Von Flew. That's what I'm going to go with. So Misha Tate, probably fourth or fifth, and puts Nunes to sleep or taps her out.
I was actually at that Misha Tate fight against Conan, and it was in, I believe, Columbus, Ohio. And, you know, I think Misha's lost to Ronda. I mean, she lost to Kat on a controversial stoppage where she was up 2-0. But, I mean, Misha just doesn't lose to a lot of people. She's beaten a lot of really good fighters. And, again, I think Amanda Nunes, I don't think she gets enough credit for how good she is. But I think Misha has one goal in this sport at this point. She wants to fight and beat Ronda Rousey. And there's only one way she has any chance of fighting and beating Ronda Rousey again. And that's if she beats Amanda Nunes.
Agreed.
Just quickly, I want to point out that Fernanda Proches will never listen to this podcast because we are clearly not being feminist here at all.
Yeah, I'm sure we're not gonna she's not gonna be big fans of us drooling over Misha Tate or me drooling over
correct
Misha Tate. Guys, we go to the heavy light heavy weight fight. We go, guys. This is actually we missed one, guys. We go to the big dogs, Brock Lesnar versus Mark the Super Slowest Hunt. In relation to the great Mike Hunt at 42 years old, 12-10-1, guys. UFC record far from impressive from the very likable Mark Hunt, 7-4-1. He did beat Frank Mir in his last fight, March 28th of 16. Lesnar, guys, 4-3 in his less than illustrious UFC career, with back-to-back losses before his exit. Last fought, Blue, December 30th, 2011. Blue, what you got?
Brock Lesnar. Let me tell you something. You just said it was a less than illustrious career. Well, let me tell you something about Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar went from being a professional wrestler off a successful college career, being an All-American. After that, he went into the WWE. He won the WWE title. He decided wrestling's not for me after fighting Goldberg at WrestleMania. After that, he goes and he plays football for the Minnesota Vikings. You know, he could have signed on the practice squad, but he didn't quite make it. So he doesn't make football, but he could have been on a practice squad in the NFL after not playing football since high school. So Brock Lesnar says, well, you know what? I want to be a professional fighter. He fights once for K1, and then he comes to the UFC. He loses to Frank Mir. He could have hung it up. He could have quit. But Brock Lesnar comes back, and Brock Lesnar beats Heath Herring. Brock Lesnar beats Randy Couture. Brock Lesnar beats everybody until he wins the UFC Heavyweight Championship. He took an absolute – people want to talk about Brock being chinny. And yeah, sure, Brock's a little chinny, but let me tell you something. Shane Colwyn beat the ever-living hell out of Brock Lesnar for a round, and Brock Lesnar came back, survived it, and beat Shane Colwyn. And so let me tell you something about Brock Lesnar. He doesn't need the money. He's making $5 or $6 million a year in the WWE. He went back and he reclaimed that championship, and now he's back because he didn't leave on his terms. Though some will look at his record, I'll say I don't look at his record. I look at a guy that's accomplished so much in sports. He's one of the greatest athletes of our lifetime. And so what he's going to do is he's going to march in against Mark Hunt. People want to talk about Mark Hunt's takedown defense. Well, let me tell you something. He has not fought great wrestlers. Mark Hunt has not looked great. And you know what nobody's done to Mark Hunt recently? They had to put him on his ass in round one and wore him down. You know what Brock Lesnar did to Frank Mir? Frank Mir has incredible jiu-jitsu. Brock Lesnar put him on his back, got to half guard, and Brock Lesnar would not let Frank Mir up. He pounded him with those 4X gloves, and after round two, Brock Lesnar beat him. He thanked Coors Light, and he had him a few beers. Well, let me tell you something. On Saturday night, Brock Lesnar is going to take Mark Hunt down. He's going to wear Mark Hunt down, and he's going to finish Mark Hunt in the second round by KO, and then he'll either go have him some Bud Light, some Coors Light, or hell, he might take Nike just for the hell of it.
Now, that's a WWE promo right there, Blue. That was fantastic.
I ever heard one.
Oh, Lord. Speaking of Bud Light and Coors Light, after that promo, I need to have about two or three of those.
That was fantastic. Hold on. Let's give Blue his theme song. I'm sorry. Let's give him the clap. Very, very strong. Stevie, what you got?
This fight, a lot of people are ragging on Lesnar, and rightfully so. I mean, the guy took off in 2011. He hasn't been back since then. In my opinion, I do agree with the idea that he didn't lose to Alistair Overeem necessarily. He lost more of a fight with it with his diverticulitis itself. If anybody's going to come back to the octagon, if anybody's going to come back, not only make a splash when it comes to what he does in the cage and the pay-per-view buys, it is going to be Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar, the difference between Brock Lesnar and every other athlete in the UFC, if you ask me, Conor McGregor, the persona he puts out there is not the true Conor McGregor. He says a lot of things that you could tell are rehearsed, although entertaining. They're rehearsed. They're prepped. What gets Brock Lesnar over? He is Brock Lesnar. So if anybody is going to do what's happening this weekend, it is going to be the man hailing out of Canada for this fight, not the United States. Yes, Canada, because he lives there.
That's what I'm talking about.
So today at the press conference. So props to you, Proteus. You got a brand new citizen up there in Brock Lesnar, one of the baddest men on the planet. But let's take a look here. People want to talk about Brock Lesnar. They want to talk about his powerful wrestling, his strength, his athleticism, that Peterson double leg that could take out a baby elephant. You're only as good as your last fight. And in recent memory, although it wasn't his last fight, Mark Hunt fought a guy, you guys might have heard of him, his name's Stipe Miocic. And every time Mark Hunt tried to get up, Stipe would take him down, and he kept taking him down, and he kept bludgeoning him over and over and over and over again. Just when you thought he was going to make a comeback, he was back down once again. Stipe Miocic took advantage of that weakness in Mark Hunt during that fight. There is some speculation that there was a poor weight cut. Hunt does cut a lot of weight to make that 265 mark. He usually balloons up a little bit over 300 pounds outside of training camp. He has been keeping leaner lately, and he looked pretty healthy today at the press conference. Although he had that terrible outing against Stipe Miocic, what a lot of people don't realize either is that Mark Hunt actually has a 76% takedown defense statistic going for him. 76% of the time, he does not get taken down. He does this well. We've seen this in his fights. If you even look back to his fight with Fabricio Verdum. There were many times where Verdum tried to take him down, and he actually was able to go ahead, shake off the takedown, walk away, and keep it standing. Here is the difference maker. The past 5 years, Brock Lesnar has been in the WWE. Mark Hunt has been fighting. Mark Hunt has been a recent number one contender, whether he was a late replacement or not. He answered the call. He made that walk. He's currently on a win streak as well. Mark Hunt has been a fighter for the past 5 years, and although it pains me to say it, Brock Lesnar has been a professional wrestler. Although Brock puts that big pressure on his opponents, Hunt will make you pay if you rush in on him. Okay?
Yeah.
He will make you pay if you rush in on him, and we also know that Brock Lesnar does not have the best chin. That is totally outside of the realm of whether or not Brock Lesnar is tough. We know he's tough. Physiologically, though, his body just can't handle a punch. Hunt's going to win with his takedown defense. I think Brock may rush him early, but Hunt's going to make sure that he pays on the way in. He's going to land the big strikes early. If they get in the clinch, which Brock likes the clinch, that's going to be a bad night for Brock Lesnar. Mark Hunt is 12-10-1. Unfortunately, I don't think Brock Lesnar is going to be the one behind the one in 12-11-1. We're going to see Mark Hunt improve to 13-10-1. Mark Hunt is going to win by knockout second round.
Yeah, I don't even know if he gets to the second round, to be honest with you. But all of what you guys are saying is very pertinent. And I thought that the breakdown that Dan Hardy and John Gooden did for BT Sports was pretty good on this fight. I think, as I said on this show previously, that if Brock Lesnar is able to get Mark Hunt to the ground, this fight is over. However, if Mark Hunt is able to time a perfect knee or a perfect uppercut as that shot is coming in, then, you know, it's all over, man. You know, Mark Hunt has got dynamite from a short distance. And I loved today at the press conference how he didn't even put his hands up. He just kept his hands down. He just looked at Brock Lesnar and said, "I'm going to knock you out," with his eyes. That's what he said. "I'm going to knock you out." So I think Brock Lesnar has a lot to prove here. I mean, you can't just come back and go, "Hey, I want to take," and I applaud him for taking on a tough challenger like Mark Hunt, because you know what? He could get knocked out. And to be honest with you guys, I keep seeing that in my head, and I just want it to play out. I just want to see Brock Lesnar twitching on the ground, that big body. He's white, and he's jacked, and I hope he gets knocked out. Mark Hunt by knockout.
Hey, motherfucker! here's the thing, guys. I don't see, you know, I think Blue's the only one, right, that has chosen Brock, and I know that Steve and I.
Well,
think
he has the fantasy god, just so you know. So
it, no doubt.
Just disclaimer.
But I think Steve and Blue are the only ones that are wrestling fans. I don't see it, guys. I just don't see it. I don't see how someone that's taken off what 5-6 years is going to come back. And this is someone that doesn't, you know, just like Travis Brown, guys, big bullies don't like getting hit. And Brock turtles when he gets hit in the hit period, especially in the face. I don't see how this fight goes more than 3 minutes max. I say Hunt with a KO or at least a TKO. And I think Brock goes back to whatever the WWE has. The heck that is, WrestleMania or whatever it's called. I don't think there's much of a chance.
SummerSlam,
sorry.
Well, so interestingly enough, and you guys may or may not realize this, from my understanding, Brock Lesnar helped pick. Mark Hunt was the guy he wanted. Mark Hunt wanted to be on UFC 200. Anybody who tells you that Mark Hunt didn't have a full camp or a bad weight cut, that ain't true. I know about a week ago, Mark Hunt weighed 269 pounds. So, let's make no mistake about it. Mark Hunt's on weight. He's been way underweight.
Yeah, he looks good.
But if he's smaller and quicker, he's still not going to be quicker than Brock Lesnar. Brock Lesnar, people want to call him a wrestler. Brock Lesnar is a once-in-a-generation athlete that can do the amount of things that he's done. From wrestling,
sure,
to collegiate wrestling, to pro wrestling, to the UFC, to football. And what happens is when he gets Mark Hunt down, Mark Hunt's going to get back up 5 minutes later, and he's going to get taken down again. So where's Mark Hunt's will is the big question.
I don't think he gets
I understand
back
people
up,
think I just don't see, you know, now can Hunt fit Lesnar with a big shot? Absolutely. But it's incredible to me that people want to remember the Brock Lesnar that fought against Aleister Overeem, against Cain Velasquez. This man had two life-threatening battles with diverticulitis. If you look at the physique Brock Lesnar brought into the UFC when he came, and you look at his physique after he went through diverticulitis, completely different physique. He's not the man beast that he is today. Now, I understand Mark Hunt could win. I love Mark Hunt. But do not sell Brock Lesnar short, because he's going to win, and then he's fighting Fedor.
Oh, I hope so, brother. I hope so, because that'll sell so many pay-per-views, and the UFC will be happy, and once they announce that they're going to sell at 200, then they can just go riding off into the sunset, right? Everybody gets rich.
Gentlemen, we move up to the main event, although, frankly, many would say that we just spoke about the main event. But, gentlemen, we move up to Cormier versus Jones. Jones, 28 years young, 22-1, and the one was, you know, most people still believe that he's undefeated, and frankly, so do I. But I will say this, Lou, the decisionator himself, John Jones, hasn't had a finish, gentlemen, since April 27th of 2013. Lou, what you got?
So I think the most unfortunate thing to happened to Daniel Cormier was for him to get hurt and not get John Jones directly off his layoff. John Jones overlifted. He wasn't flowing as freely as he typically does. But make no mistake, John Jones is probably the best mixed martial artist we've ever seen. I don't like John Jones. I've always told people this about John Jones. I'm not a big John Jones fan, but I love watching him fight. Like, it's not that way with every fighter. Now, it's faded a little, but, you know, he's had some wars. But I just don't know what Cormier can change from their first fight to beat John Jones. I mean, Daniel Cormier is a hell of a fighter. But, you know, if he beats John Jones, it's a huge upset. Anybody who says differently, you know, does DC have a shot? Absolutely. But I just think Jones is going to be able to, again, use his distance. Cormier wasn't able to impose his wrestling on Jones at all. If he hasn't changed something there, he's not going to be able to use his wrestling, meaning he has to try to beat Jones in a striking fight or getting in the clinch. And it's just tough. Now, John McCarthy's going to be hard on John Jones. I don't blame Jones for not being thrilled with that. He's going to watch Jones' fingers. Jones loves using those fingers, and he uses it. He uses those oblique kicks and his fingers that he almost wants to put on your forehead. And he does that to change your vision, where you're looking. Because if he can get you to look somewhere else, now the angles he's coming from changes even more. And I think that we'll see in this fight, I think that we're going to see, I hope we see the best John Jones we've seen. You know, I'm not a John Jones fan, but man, that guy, when it comes to fighting, there's no more. You know, he can do so many things. I mean, he choked out Machida. You know, that wasn't what we thought was going to happen. He is beating people at their own games, and that's beyond anything, I think. That's the best you can ever be as a martial artist, when you can go in and beat the best in the world at their game. So I got John Jones. I think DC is a survivor. I think it's probably Jones' decision 5.
So you pointed out something that I was going to touch on, but I'm not going to rehash right now, is that Jones beats people at their own game. We've seen that time and time again, and it's really quite impressive, because when you think he's going to zig, he zags. You talked about the clinch as well, and Jones went in with inside the clinch. In the first fight, Jones did an awesome job in the clinch. He constantly kept wrist control. If you go back and watch that fight, he was constantly grabbing Daniel Cormier's wrist, pulling it down to his waist. At one point, he was actually trying to fish his arm around his back and hold Daniel's arm behind his back to give him a little bit of the big brother treatment. And he used those elbows on the inside and those knees on the inside of the clinch so well against the fence. he had DC pushed up against the fence in the clinch, where that's usually DC's game. The only time we really saw Daniel have any success in that fight was when he did get John in the clinch in the second round, made it a little bit more dirty, and roughed him up a little bit. I thought DC actually won the second round of that fight. I thought John took the fight 4-1 as far as the scoring went, just for the record. He definitely won that fight, but DC had success in the clinch. I think something that he's adjusted to, but maybe hasn't totally adjusted to, or hadn't totally adjusted to at their fight at 182, was the quickness of the light heavyweights. When he's hitting these guys with these crazy high crotch takedowns and flipping them over the head, if you watch that highlight reel takedown that DC had in the third round over Jones, the first part of that takedown was a highlight reel worthy takedown. The only problem was is as soon as John Jones hit the mat, he slid out the back door and stood up immediately. Like it didn't even happen. Like it was a father playing with his child in the pool and they were just floating right back to the surface. I think the only X factor that John Jones really has to worry about in this fight is, you know, does the OSP John Bones Jones show up? And I don't think we're going to get that guy. I think Bones is back to his old self. You could say what you want about him. On the outside of the octagon, that's a totally different story. Inside the cage, right. We are seeing the Michael Jordan of MMA fight right now, and we should feel privileged to see this guy. He is undefeated, DJ Tony. He's not thought to be undefeated. He is undefeated. He beat up Matt Hamill. He beat him up.
Yeah.
No disqualification was there. You guys notice as well that Steve Mazzagatti doesn't referee for the UFC anymore. Daniel Cormier, I think that John has gotten in his head. I think John's broken him. I think, and to quote one John Bones Jones, he is balls deep in Daniel Cormier's head, whatever that's supposed to mean. He is within his psyche. I see Bones taking this to the fourth round. I think he submits Cormier. Cormier's broken by this fight, and that's no slight on DC, but John Bones Jones is back. I see him finishing this fight. He's due for a finish, as Tony pointed out here a little bit ago. It's been 3 years. It's time for John to come back. It's time for him to take his belt back, and DC's just going to have to step aside.
Yeah, I think you're right, Stevie. I think that John Jones is teabagging DC's brain at this moment in time. But I also think that Blue is right. All of you people that want to hate on John Jones on his personal life, that's fine. You're allowed to do that. But you have to separate the fellow that fights in the octagon and the fellow that has too much money and likes cocaine. I have no problem with John Jones. He is the greatest fighter that we've ever seen. And as long as we don't ever see him punching his wife out in an elevator, I'm okay with him doing a little bit of coke on his own time. I don't need to know about what he does on his own time. I just want to see him put on some good fights, which brings me to this fight. Now, I know that DC and AKA have brought in a big mammoth man, and you know what? It's funny because I think that Cain Velasquez will benefit from having that fella in the training room, but I don't think that DC will. I don't think that DC is going to be able to contend with Jones's reach. I don't think he's going to be able to contend with Jones's strength. I don't think he's going to be able to contend with Jones's takedowns. And I believe we are, 5-1 in takedowns on Jones's side. So I think I think we see pretty much the same kind of fight happen. Can Cormier win this fight? Of course he can. Absolutely. And would a third fight between these two guys be exciting? Yes, it would. Absolutely. The build-up to this fight, even though we're not seeing the build-up to the fight that we saw for the first fight, which was super exciting, it's still there. It's still resonating. And Daniel Cormier is feeling the effects of not actually winning this title from Jon Jones. He is feeling the effects from the fans on just winning a title that was just out there swimming around in the air, and he grabbed it and he won it against you guys tell me. See, my brain is not here, guys.
Proteus is falling asleep on us, gentlemen.
Yeah. Anyways,
Anthony
so
Johnson.
I'm going to take. Yeah, Anthony Johnson and Gorgeous George had to correct me on last week as well on the same thing. I apologize, but I think that Jon Jones takes this fight. I think that we're going to see a lot more creative Jon Jones because he's been in there against Daniel Cormier and he's felt them before. And yeah, Daniel Cormier has felt Jon Jones before, but again, we're seeing the greatest fighter of all time right now, guys. And I think that Jon Jones takes it. I'm not going to call it a knockout. I'll probably go with a decision, but yeah, I'm going with Jon Jones.
Gentlemen, I think we're all going all across the board. I'm a big DC fan, AKA all the way, anything Bay Area.
Yeah, we know that.
And, but I gotta be honest with you. I just don't see how on earth DC beats, and I can't stand the guy, but beats the greatest fighter that
yeah.
we've seen thus far, even on coke and all his other, you know, whatever things that he has going. I think he's not a good human being. I'm surprised people like him, but there's no possible way that DC or anyone beats Jon Jones right now. That said, he didn't look good versus OSP, but I don't think he hates OSP. And I think Jones Blue, I think he fights to the level of his competition. DC, to my mind, is the second best pound for pound fighter in the light heavy. Well, actually, that's not pound for pound, right? But in the light heavy. And I just don't see that. I mean, the margin, however, so far, I don't think it's even close. I think Jones, and I think he finishes it. But I don't think it's a sub. I think it's actually some sort of PK or KO. But, yeah, I think it's Jones all the way. And, unfortunately, I'm not a fan of Jones. DC, love you. I just don't see it. So I go with Jones.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, we don't have to be a fan of Jon Jones in his personal life, but he is the greatest fighter we've ever seen.
Nothing
else,
guys?
No, I think over the past 2 hours, we pretty much covered the next 3 days as thoroughly as we could. And got a lot of good opinions, a lot of good ideas. I'm happy to come on here anytime and talk with you guys in Junkie Nation about the upcoming bouts. And I think that's pretty much a wrap for all of us.
Yeah, we've been talking for almost 2 hours, guys, or we've just been talking for a little over 2 hours. So let's get it done.
Gentlemen,
yep.
As always, our 1 hour show goes into overtime. But from the man up north, the man who never has to say sorry about buying the Saga and Rush albums, and secretly, guys, he also has Alanis Morissette. Proteus, follow him at Proaus. And the man that secretly stores creatine in his car, Shark Attack 316. Steve B, follow him at Shark Attack 316. Is that any reference to Austin 316? We'll never know. And from the Blue Carolina himself, the legend that is the MMA fighting god, Morgan, don't strike me down. I'm just repeating what said. Buffalo Blue, Foam had Buffalo Blue, and me.
God,
forgive me. And me, I'm the DJ, not in the PJs at 5:30 my time. Gentlemen, we're looking forward to Misha Tate. I mean, the International Fight Week as it is. Gentlemen, come on back. Proteus. We're gone.
Hey, I'm not surprised, motherfuckers.